Now. All right. Hello again. Sure. If everybody will turn in their Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, that's where we'll be spending some time tonight. So if I were to enter the sanctuary tonight and challenge everybody to run, first one to the basketball hoop wins, what kind of a reaction would I get? It's cold. We did something similar with the youth recently, and those who are here will remember. We did a little bit of a backwards race. We started at the basketball hoop and actually ran into the ping pong table. And we took them outside, and the purpose of that illustration was to show something completely different, but I made a keen observation. We took them outside, and we told them that there would be a prize to the person who came in first. Didn't tell them what the prize was, just told them there would be a prize. Go. They ran. It was amazing. And actually, most of them ran really well. Some of them chose not to. But I can understand that, because they didn't know what the prize was. So often in life, we're motivated by tangible prizes. We're motivated by the things that we can see, touch, and feel, count in particular. But on this particular day, we told the kids, just go ahead and run. And they ran. It was a great thing. In life, so often we are motivated by the tangible, but what happens when the prize is intangible? What happens when the prize is something that we can't quite see, touch, and feel? I think we're fortunate as Christians because we know what the prize is, or at least we should. If we spend enough time in the Bible, we can actually find out a whole lot of detail about the prizes that we'll receive upon leaving this life and moving on to the next. We can't say exactly what's going to happen in the end. Come in 4 months and we'll talk about that one, Christ's coming King. But we can know kind of an idea of the prizes that we're going to receive. And that's part of what we're going to talk about tonight. We're starting a new year in the church. This morning we had a good meeting that Mike led, that we're starting a rather large and comprehensive program at the church. And so with this year, we're stepping into something new. We're facing a new challenge. It's hard to say right now, as it is in any year, for any church, because we all face challenges. It's hard to say what the prize is going to be for the particular program or efforts that we're going to make. But God's word is faithful in telling us that he is faithful and that our work for him won't be in vain. And we can take confidence in that as we start a new year, that as we make commitments to godly challenges, we know that we can move forward and we know that God will be faithful and that our efforts won't be for naught. And so today we're going to look at 1 Corinthians 9, verses 24 through 27. I'm reading from the ESV, so it might be a little different, but we'll talk about some other translations later, so it'll all work together. So follow along with me if you will. Do you not know that in a race all the runners compete, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and I keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. I figure we'll start with a little bit of background. We know that Paul is writing this letter to the Corinthian church. And in the time of Paul, Corinth would have been known for two things. The first is its geographical location. You have the mainland of Greece, you have this tiny little strip of land, and then the isthmus that's attached to it, that's called the Peloponnese. Corinth was located on that tiny little strip of land. And so they controlled two seaports, which made the location very strategically favorable. They had, for commerce and for military reasons, they had control of two ports, so it was a very important city. They even went so far thousands of years ago as to build a stone pathway between the two ports so that they could transport cargo from one bay to the next. Even ships and vessels could go across. So you can see how it would have been a valuable location to whoever controlled it, because they wouldn't want to always sail around the Peloponnese because it could be dangerous at different times of year. The second thing, I like the first thing, that's why I shared it. The second thing, and the reason that I'm actually talking tonight, is that Corinth was known for what was called the Isthmian Games. We know that the Greeks were famous for the Olympic Games. They are called the Olympic Games because they're held every 4 years. That's an Olympiad. It's a unit of measure in Greek culture. In the first and the third year of every Olympiad, they held the Isthmian Games. They were just like the Olympic Games, just not as prestigious. They held a lot of the same events, chariot races, foot races, wrestling, an event called pancration, which I think sounds really interesting because it's the forerunner to our modern mixed martial arts fighting. It was kind of where boxers and wrestlers all got together in the ring and last man standing wins. And so Corinth was well known for these games, that the same athletes who likely would have competed in the Olympics would have come over to these games as well. Though, like I said, the prestige wasn't there, but they were well known for it. And so Paul, in writing this letter to the Corinthian church, would have been well aware what a race was. They were known for it. They would have known that races have certain qualities that just all races have. They have a set length. You have an opponent. You have a goal. You have a prize. And so Paul lays out that our Christian walk is something like a race. There's a length, a distance that we're running. We don't always know what that length or distance is, because for everybody it's different. There is a goal. There certainly is an opponent. And what we're here to talk about tonight is that there is a prize. One of the things that made Paul so effective in his preaching is that he seemed to have a way to connect to his audience. And you'll notice that as he wrote all of his letters, he mentions athletics a lot. Because he was writing to all these churches that were surrounding Greek and Macedonian territories, and they all would have known and identified with running and with athletics. We can identify with running and athletics. Even the least athletic person in here, when they were a kid, was last one to the tree was a rotten egg. You understand that. So everybody can identify with the idea of running a race. The difference in our race, we're all running the same race. I think Paul was even making that clear by saying that, do you not know that in a race all runners compete? Everyone is competing in this race. The difference in our race is that we know Jesus. That should change things. It should make the goal abundantly clear. It should make the opponent abundantly clear. And the more time we spend in the scriptures, it makes the prize clear. So we have to live and run our race in light of the knowledge that we have of Jesus. So what does that mean? Well, Paul goes on in verse 25 to say that every athlete exercises self-control in all things. Boy, that's a tough statement to swallow. When we think of athletes, we think of preparation. We think of training. In fact, in the NIV, I believe the verse actually says that all athletes go into strict training, rather than saying that they live in discipline. When we think of training, what do we think of? We think of denial. We think of sacrifice. We think of exerting ourselves beyond where we think is humanly possible to prepare for some greater event. And so Paul is saying that every runner, that's us, exercises discipline. We go into strict training. We're to exercise sacrifice. We're to exercise self-denial to prepare ourselves for this race that we're running. The context of this passage is actually kind of interesting. Pastor Bob, you might not want to listen to this part. 1 Corinthians 9, the whole passage leading up to that is a rather interesting one that I think pastors and ministry boards could probably have discussions about all over the country all the time. Because in that passage, Paul is laying out the case that as a preacher of the gospel, he's entitled to compensation. and that the Corinthian church, by Jewish law, by the law of that day, this letter could have been very different. It could have been a bill that he was writing to the Corinthian church. But instead, Paul chose to refuse compensation, and he wanted to make that abundantly clear. And he wanted to make sure everybody knew why. And that's kind of getting at the meat of this passage, is that Paul was exercising sacrifice and self-denial. He actually says earlier that he's made no use of any of these rights, nor am I writing these things to secure any such provision, for I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting. For if I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for boasting. Necessity is laid upon me. It was necessity for him to preach the gospel, and he didn't want anyone to cloud the fact that he was being paid to give this message with the message itself. We learn in Acts that Paul actually continued being a tent maker throughout his ministry. We know that some of the churches supported Paul and brought him things and took care of him when they could. But in terms of compensation, Paul said no. He wanted to sacrifice the worldly pleasures, the worldly comforts, to stand and deliver the gospel for the sake of the gospel, and didn't want anyone to misunderstand why he was standing there. Because I'm sure if you pay anybody enough, they'll stand and preach the gospel. But Paul wanted to make sure that everybody knew why he was doing it. And so he goes on to say that the runners, they do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Depending on the games of the time, the Greek games, there were games all over Greece. In the Olympics, you would have received a crown, a wreath on your head that would have been made of an olive tree. Depending on where you were in Greece and which athletic games you were competing in, they were different perishable wreaths, is the best way to put it. In the Isthmian games, you were competing for a pine wreath. But no matter what, the wreath that they gave you would die. And in time, the memory of the wreath would die. And so if you weren't running for the glory of someone greater, what were you running for? I came across an interesting story in World Magazine a couple weeks ago. I'll throw this question out to the audience to see if anybody knows. Who ESPN rated as the number one high school athlete of all time? I thought it was an interesting question. The number one high school athlete of all time, especially in today's world where the media seems to pick up on anybody when they're 10 years old if they have any athletic promise and follow them. Michael Phelps, good guess, but no. No? But thank you. When I was thinking of it, my first thought went to LeBron James, because here's a guy who took the basketball world by storm recently, and you have ESPN doing this now, so why not put him at the top? And he was in the top 10, but he wasn't top. Tiger Woods, prior to what's going on now, took the world by storm as a high school athlete, and he shook up the golf world. And so he came in at number two. But number one, well, he's before my time, I'll say. But some of you may know who he is. He was actually a runner by the name of Jim Ryan. Jim Ryan has a fascinating story. He had some hearing loss, 50% hearing loss, actually. And so he had balance issues growing up and throughout his life. But in junior high, he was trying out for the track team, trying out for all these, you know, different cross-country programs, and he just couldn't get in. Finally, he makes the track team, and his sophomore year, he runs a 5-minute, 30-second mile. Pretty average. Sounds like the number one athlete of all time. Except 1 year later, he ran a 4:07. And by the end of that year, he was the first American to break the 4-minute mile. And he did it at the age of 17. At the age of 17, he went to compete in Tokyo in the Olympics. And so he travels across the world to represent his country, and he loses in the semifinals. But he's 17. He'll have another chance. Along the way, he improves his mile time to 3 minutes and 51 seconds was the best mile he ever ran. I think he did that when he was 19. And so in 1968, he goes to Mexico City to run the Olympics. finishes second. Now, they're at about a 7,000-foot elevation, so that was his reason for why he didn't quite do it. He said at sea level, he still thinks he would have won. And he came home to find out that even his local papers said Jim Ryan only gets second. They were disappointed. One more shot, 1972, he goes, he runs again. He gets bumped, he has the equilibrium problems, he falls, never makes it out of the qualifying round. At that point, he's standing in a tunnel with his wife, saying, now what? I've been chasing this medal for the last how many years? Now what? Except for Jim Ryan's story, that was actually the beginning, which was great, because that was the moment when he stopped chasing the perishable wreath and he started chasing the imperishable. He had become a Christian in his time leading up to this point. And today, what a story. He started an outreach program for teens where he's teaching them how to run and to share the gospel. In 1996, he was elected to Congress in the House of Representatives to represent the state of Kansas, and he stayed there for 11 years. And he also helps kids who have the hearing loss and the balance deficiencies that he grew up with. And so now here's this man who spent so long chasing the perishable. He started chasing the imperishable, and now you read his story, and wow, it just makes a difference. I mean, if you win that medal in the Olympics, that's great. And in 1968, this guy won this Olympic record, and ESPN named him this and all that. But what does that do for eternity? That work started after the 1972 games. He still holds, for high school runners, I think 8 records nationally. His name's still in the books. Nobody can top those times for a 17-year-old, 18-year-old. He holds the fastest time for basically any race that was held with all high school students. And I thought Jim was a great story of somebody who realized what the real prize was and started chasing it. Because the Bible tells us we will get an imperishable wreath. We'll get crowns, as the Bible teaches us. The scriptures lay out a few different kinds, a crown of righteousness, a crown of glory, a crown of life. And different people talk about them at different points. And God will bestow these upon us. And we don't know when or why or for what. That's why we're just running the race as if we want to win it. So that one day, when we get to heaven, God will give us a crown. And then the best part happens. So we get to take that crown off our heads and lay it at the feet of Jesus. Because the bottom line is, he already won the race. And to the victor go the spoils. But we need to run as though we want to win that race so that we can have that crown, so we can lay it at the feet of Jesus. There's a song about that we fall down, we lay our crowns at the feet of Jesus. It's such a great song. And that's a moment that I think we should all be striving for. That's what we're running for. We're running to get to that point where we can give the glory to Jesus because it's his. It's all his. Paul closes up by reminding us of something that's a little sobering. Basically, it's not a drill. This isn't practice. And we've got to practice what we preach. He says he does not run aimlessly. He does not box as one beating the air. He's painting the pictures basically of Rocky IV. Rocky's running through he's running aimlessly, just getting ready to fight the Russian. And he's boxing at the air because that's just what boxers do. And he's getting ready. We don't necessarily have that opportunity because when we're dropped into the race, we're expected to run. When we put on the uniform, the world looks at us and says, that's a Christian. They must be perfect. And so there's expectations put on us right away. It's a cliched saying, but if we keep our eye on the prize, if we keep our eyes on Jesus, we can run the race and run it well. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to have issues along the way. But as long as we're running and running well, that's what matters. One of the things Paul frequently mentions in his letters is that the flesh is one of our worst enemies. And so that's kind of one final way where this passage would really stick for an athlete, because in those times, if you were competing in the games, with the exception of maybe the chariot race, you weren't wearing anything. Runners were often naked. Wrestlers were naked. The only thing that stood in your way in your race was you. It was your own flesh. And so you faced the challenge of overcoming yourself so that you could run to win, so that you could wrestle to win, whatever the game was. In this case, it's a race. And so Paul reminds us, you've got to discipline your body. Keep it under control. Because otherwise, after you're preaching to someone else, you yourself could be disqualified. And then what good has your word done to influence the lives of others? You can have a whole train of people following you. But if you take your eyes off Jesus and you veer off in your race, they're all going to follow you. That's just how it works. And so discipline is everything. Matthew Henry points out that the beautiful thing about the Christian race, the running of the race, not the people, is that we can all run as if we were going to obtain the prize. We can all obtain the prize. Paul says at the beginning of this that, do you not know that in a race all the runners compete, but only one receives the prize? We said earlier, Jesus actually is the one who's going to receive the prize ultimately, because he won the race. But we can all run as though we are going to obtain the prize. And so just like in the youth race, some of us will choose to run well. I mean, in that race, I like to think the effort would have been better had they all known what the prize was. I actually thought the effort was pretty good, considering when they got to the end, the prize was $5. It's cash money. And so there were people at the end who actually were disappointed they didn't run, because that was worth it to them. I would think knowing that we're running for Jesus would be more precious than anything we could imagine. And the more times we remind ourselves of that, the harder we'll run, and we'll run well. I love 2 Timothy 4:6 through 8. It's a good passage. Paul's about to die, and he sends this letter to his friend Timothy. And he says, "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come." He knows that he's almost done. And then a favorite verse of so many, he says, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid upon me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing." We're all running for a crown. We're all running for a crown that we can lay at the feet of Jesus. I don't know about you, but when that day comes, I don't want to be standing at his feet empty-handed. And so that's my challenge to you tonight. Run the race well. We're starting a new year. We heard this morning it's time to take those godly challenges. It's time to put your faith and your trust in God and to move forward and run the race well, and run it for Jesus. So let's pray.